Well, I'm pleased to say I'm joined by Darren Keefe, who is a professional punter on the Greyhound Racing and has made a successful career of it. But how did it all start, your life in gambling?
I went to Catford when I was about 10 years of age, and I was fortunate enough to bump into people like Paddy Milligan. My uncle and my granddad, they owned dogs with Paddy Milligan at Catford. So we used to go there regularly, three times a week. And it was there that I bumped into John McGee and Harry Finlay, two legends of the game. So my fate was sealed really from that moment on, from a kid.
As a kid you were having little bets?
Yeah, I used to have a pound on, yeah. Normally when they crossed the line, I'd say to my granddad, I was on the winner, pound. But that's how I started, yeah.
And something that's always interested you, the gambling side?
Always, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I loved the greyhounds first. Like I was obsessed with greyhound racing from the moment I set foot Catford Dogs. Catford and Walthamstow, I was just obsessed with it. So I had a stopwatch. I used to clock all the dogs, used to go to kennels every Sunday. I was like an encyclopedia of knowledge. I knew all the track records from the sprint to the marathon. So from that age, I was kind of on a one-track road, really.
And is it just dogs? Do you gamble on anything else?
Just dogs. I'm an expert on dogs. I don't need to test the waters anywhere else.
So you'd never have a bet on football, racing?
I have done. I have had bets, but I wouldn't have a serious bet. I wouldn't expect to make a living from the bets, from those bets I'd be having. Whereas with dogs, I take it seriously because it's my living, it's my business.
So what is your approach to it and how does it differ to sort of regular punters, betting on dogs?
Well, like any business, you're essentially trying to win a percentage of your turnover. So the way I treat it now is I just want to have as many bets as possible. I just want to keep ticking over. There's never a last bet for me. So I'm just trying to force bets out every day. But then you have to get your staking right. So then when you fancy something a bit stronger and you're getting over the odds, you need to capitalise and make sure that you get the money.
And that's what you're looking for, essentially, a lot of the time is mistakes in the betting, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really what it's all about. You know, I don't want to be betting even money shots at all. I want to be backing dogs at 4, 5, 6 to 1 that I make 5 to 2, 3 to 1. Over a lifetime of those bets, I know I'm going to win money. So I'm confident in my judgment that way that, you know, you're taking the gambling element out of it, actually.
How do you see that?
Because I know I trust in my judgment. I'm confident in my judgment. So I know I'm right. So if I'm backing a dog at 3 to 1 that I make 6 to 4, there's never a last bet. If I have 50 of those bets, I know enough of them will win for me to show a profit.
So it's you against the odds compilers, essentially?
In a way it would be, yeah. I guess so.
And you're so confident in your judgment. How many videos would you be watching in your daily routine to be so confident of what you're seeing?
Well, I watch racing every day. So it's an obsession. You just keep up to date with the form and you have to know your dogs. And then going back watching videos is just a refresher. You know, near a race you might want to see 2 or 3 dogs that have run against each other, run again. They might be in different traps. And then really it's price versus chance. You know, 2 dogs could be equal chances. They might have been 6 to 4 each or 2 one week. Something might have happened in the race. The following week they run against each other. Now one of them's 2 to 1, the other one's 7 to 1. So automatically I'm going to bet the 7 to 1 shot if there's not a lot between the 2 dogs. And that just carries on. That's just an ongoing process. There's so much racing.
Yeah, so much racing. Is it all about videos and odds? Do you look at form at all?
Yeah, you have to. I mean, any angle. I mean, any angle, really.
How many hours a day would you work?
Again, that's all dependent. I'd always look at races the day before, the night before, and so I'd know what times I need to be available for. You know, if there might be 3 races I'm interested in one day, there might be 30 races I'm interested in another day. So it's all dependent. It's all different.
And is it particular tracks that you focus on?
Yeah, now I mainly do like Monmore and Doncaster now. They'd probably be my bread and butter tracks. But any open racing at Hove or Romford on a Friday, I'd always be up to date with the open racing as well. The better quality dogs, I've always been a fan of.
you make a living from it, but you must have had times where you've had bad runs, bad times, things just not going to plan. How do you cope with that?
You just, somehow you just get through it. You know you have to win. So if I'm on a losing run, if I have a losing day or a losing week or something, I'll just work harder, devote myself a little bit more to it, and make sure I win. It's just, that's how I've always done it. I never go on a losing run for too long. You might just down your stakes a little bit. Cut your stakes down a little bit. It's all about confidence. You have to regain your confidence and know that you're never as bad as you think you are when it's all going wrong.
And you were telling me earlier about a Trixie that we can give an example of and how it might sort of affect you. Tell us about the Trixie that you bet.
Yeah, I had a Trixie recently. I had a £50 Trixie recently. I took the prices. 7-2, 13-2, and 13-2.
Which were bigger. You thought they were far too big. Mistake.
Yeah, I mean, I made the 7-2 shot 2-1. I made the 13-2 shot 3-1. And the other 13-2 shot, I made probably 7-2. So they're automatic bets for me. Even if I half fancy them, they haven't got to be naps. I'm not going to have £1 million on them singles, but I'm getting massively over the odds on those three dogs. So automatically, I'm going to play. So the first two have won. The third dog, there was a non-runner. So I'm on at SP. And the dog's gone off at 5-4, and it's won. So it's killed the bet. So I was fuming about that. I mean, people would say you've won, you've still had a decent win. The bet still comes to £7,000 or whatever it's come to. But it should have come to £20,000. It's a 100-1 winner, and I've not capitalised on it. Through no fault of my own, other than putting a bet on at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, if I'd have waited until 6 o'clock, known that last dog was a non-runner, that 13-2 shot wouldn't have been in the bet. I wouldn't have had it.
And how's it make you feel when that happens?
Disappointed, but it's part and parcel of the game. The last dog could have got beat, and then I'm just on the double. So it's a small win. But what's annoying is when the bookmakers get it wrong and I get it right, I have to get paid. Because there'll be a million other times when I'm having them Trixies and they're not coming off. I'm getting one winner, two winners. So when them three dogs win, it's that clever a bet, I've got to get the money because it's my living.
Well, you were saying the Trixies are a good way for you to bet because it's kind of betting to what you could afford, smaller outgoings.
They're stress-free bets. Income. I love those bets. If you can have your Trixies, your lucky 15s, so on and so forth, I love having those bets because you're not risking the world. You're not risking your livelihood at all. You've got a chance of winning big if you're clever enough and you can get over the odds. You might want to have like a Trixie free even money shots. I'd rather have a Trixie and try and find dogs at 5-6-1.
How is it as a lifestyle being a pro gambler?
As a lifestyle, there's pros and cons to it. I mean, you have a lot of freedom. You're your own boss. You don't answer to anybody. When you're not betting, you can enjoy the fruits of your labour. But obviously, you have to work very hard at it. You have to devote. I mean, I've devoted my life to it. I've been committed to it ever since I started because if I don't put the work and effort in, I'm not going to get paid. So I have to put the hours in. So it can turn you into a workaholic a bit if you let it. But it's all about finding the balance. Like anything in life, you just have to find the balance.
Yeah, it is quite intense, isn't it? I'd say it's an intense life. And you say you have to counteract that. It used to be with going to the dogs, but you don't do so much anymore. Now you go nightclubbing just for a relief.
You have to let your hair down, yeah, because it's a stressful job. And things like that, things like last night, it's still a decent win for me last night. It's a good day's wages.
But
yeah, it's a good day's work by anyone's means, but I should have got more. So sometimes you might need a drink just to settle yourself down after something like that happens. And that's when they're winning. There's plenty of times when it's going wrong and you're not getting paid.
What do you do then?
I'll probably work a bit harder, a bit more serious. When I'm not doing any good and I'm losing, then it makes me work harder. I don't go the other way. I don't go and drown my sorrows. I'd rather celebrate the wins and then work harder when I'm losing.
So if we see you in a nightclub, we know it's going well.
Yeah, certainly not going bad. Although there are times when it is going bad and you might think, I need a drink, I need to forget about this game for a day or two.
It's just a real yo-yo lifestyle, isn't it, between the intensity of the gambling and then having to counteract that intensity by really going and letting your hair down until, you know, early hours of the morning. And regularly, you go out a lot.
Yeah, I'd go out 2-3 nights a week, but that's because I don't go racing anymore. Mm. You know, when I first got into betting on dogs, I was at university, there was no Betfair, and I used to go racing every night of the week if I could. When I was at university, I'd go wherever there was a dog track. So times change, and you have to evolve. You have to change with it.
So a life as a pro punter, I'd imagine, can be quite lonely. You're sort of working from home on your own, dealing with a range of emotions when you're winning and losing. And of course, there's a lot of talk at the moment about mental health and social media. Do you have to look after your mental health? Is it something you're aware of?
Not so much, no. I mean, you'd have to be a very strong character to make it as a professional gambler. You know, you have to be a certain type of person. Because you wouldn't have, if you didn't have belief in what you was doing, if you wasn't winning, you just wouldn't consistently place bets.
What strengths and qualities then as a person do you think you have to be a professional gambler?
As a person? Mm. As a person, you need to be very level-headed. That I think that's a big help. If you can have balance in what you do, because you know you're going to back loads of losers, so you've got to be able to handle that. It's how you deal with the stress of when it's not going right, when you're backing losers. By the same token, when you're flying and you're winning, you can't think that run's going to last forever. So it's just about having a level head, being balanced, and taking every bet on its merits. You know, as I say, some of the greatest bets I've ever had have been losers. And that Trixie I had last night, those three dogs could have got beat. It's still a great bet, because I know I was right at those prices. So having that belief in your judgment, having that self-confidence as a person, it's only going to stand you in good stead.
Would I be right in saying that for you, there's an aspect of it that just comes naturally, whether it's an obsession or what, I don't know, but just the natural ability to look at the dogs and see things that maybe other people wouldn't see?
I've always had a knack for backing winners. Always had that knack. Just as I've evolved and times have changed, you have to move with the times and just, you know, become more of a professional gambler. I was always a great judge. Probably not the best gambler in the world, but a great judge, obsessed with dogs, knew the form inside out. But then, as you make more and more of a living out of it, I've become a stronger gambler, a better gambler. And that's been the biggest difference, really.
It's been a while since you were involved in training greyhounds, but you did have an immense career with some fantastic dogs. For people who are watching this who maybe don't remember, just give us a little run through from start to finish of your career in training greyhounds.
Started training greyhounds with Carly Philpott about 2002, 2003. I remember I bought a dog called Santa Vita, and we gave him to Charlie Lister, actually, and he made the Scottish Derby final. Finished second, he was beating a short head in the Scottish Derby final. And around that time, we'd got together and we started training dogs together. So he was the first dog, real high quality dog that we had. And shortly after him, bought a dog called Ballymacuil. And we was only training out of a back garden, mum's back garden. And he made the Derby final, being trained out of a back garden. So we had kind of a good partnership, a knack for getting the best out of dogs. And then we bumped into a guy called Paul Leifrimson, and he just bought a property and wanted us to go and train dogs there. Excuse me. So we expanded and we went from having 4 or 5 dogs in the back garden and going to Sitting Bull and Rye House on a Sunday to being fully fledged professional trainers, and you know, having dogs like Ballymac Charlie, Ballymac Pires, Ballymac Nillock, so on and so forth, you know, just brilliant dogs.
and then eventually you moved on and you actually owned dogs yourself, and Sam Poots was involved. Barnford on Air, we have to mention Barnford on Air, what a star he was. Unfortunately, as we mentioned, he was infertile. I think he would have been a fantastic stud dog, just a champion, one of the fastest dogs we've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, he broke four track records, just an absolute aeroplane. You know, he was a special dog.
You said that you were kind of the brains behind the training, liked figuring out what to do with dogs. What was important? If you were going to train a dog now, what's important in training a greyhound?
I was always a great placer of dogs. I knew my dogs inside out. I knew what tracks suited them. So that's where I came in. I was a good planner of dogs. In terms of training them, love, care and attention, giving them the best of everything. Can't go wrong, you know, making sure they're fit and well. They'll do the rest.
And having your hands on them, obviously you were gambling at the time, that day-to-day care and knowing them inside out, how much of an edge did that give you when you were gambling?
Yeah, I mean, that's how I first started off betting big, because I'd be buying dogs, and especially when it was in Carly's name, she was an unknown quantity as well. So we was going to tracks with top-class dogs that was so underestimated by the bookmakers, it was a joke. You know, we was getting, there was one occasion I bought a bitch called Darren's Lady in the first round of Romford Puppy Cup. She was 100-1 anti-post and she was 20-1 for a heat. And we backed her from 20-1 into 2-1 in the early days, and she won. She won at 20s and she made the final. She finished fourth in the final. We got paid out each way at 100-1. But, you know, that was a massive edge. So I was buying dogs and placing them in races that, you know, I knew they had great chances, and was making it pay effectively that way. You know, I was betting cash at the track then, going to Walthamstow. Remember, one of the first runners we ever had, I had an 8,002 cash at Walthamstow with TNF, and he won in a maiden, he won first time out. So getting dogs first time out, setting dogs up for touches, that was how I really started.
And that, of course, is about placement. But can you tell, like, when you know your dog, if they're up for it that day or maybe not? Does that make a difference?
As long as they're not giving you any negative vibes, then they're just going to go and do, you know, they're so consistent that you know your dogs. If they don't look well, that's when you know. But in terms of them going out and performing, yeah, they're just so consistent.
Do you still sort of speak to contacts that you have in the sport for tips like that? Do you ever use contacts for tips, or do you just use your own eyes and knowledge?
No, not at all. Yeah, not at all. Like, times have changed a lot. So, you know, in terms of, I wouldn't really speak to anybody now in terms of when I'm doing my card and, you know, trying to find bets.
They're coming to you.
That's it. No one comes to me. No one comes to me either. No one comes to me either. I just, you know, I've got a job to do. I've got a living to make, and that's how I make it. So I have to put the work and effort in. You know, I don't ask anybody for anything. I just have to watch my videos and make sure I get it right, make sure I win.
The dog game has changed a lot since you and I first met all those years ago, for better or worse?
Well, for worse, I would guess. I mean, when I started off, like, that were the glory days for me. I mean, I was going to Walthamstow, Wimbledon. I was going racing every night of the week. And the quality of dog then was unbelievable. The quality of trainer was unbelievable as well. Now, it's totally different. You know, you're betting on graded dogs for the most part. So the game has changed a lot quality-wise. You know, even the tracks as well. I mean, I don't go racing anymore because there's no atmosphere at the track. When I used to go to Walthamstow, I used to love going there. But now, you know, in my area, Crayford, Romford, there's no buzz or atmosphere there.
Do you miss it as it was?
Yeah, absolutely, you would. You know, they were great times. And you can't underestimate the great characters that you bumped into as well. You know, great camaraderie. You go to Walthamstow and the punters knew every dog inside out. They had a strong opinion, you know. And I miss that now, because now it's just a screen. It's me against Betfair, or a few troops in the shop putting bets on, you know, this totally mundane as regards to what it used to be. You know, so the excitement, the buzz completely gone out of it.
There are some big challenges for you, aren't there, in pro punting? Probably the hardest of them is the fact that you can't get bets on, which is quite crucial.
It's hard
really.
To get. I mean, you can get bets on, but it's the level of bet you can get on and how you consistently get on as well. That's the challenge. So, that has its own stress that comes with it and all, I guess.
And a big part of the job, time-consuming, trying to... What do you do? How do you get bets on?
Yeah, again, it depends. I mean, your bread and butter is Betfair. You just need to be. You must win on Betfair. But then when you do win on Betfair continuously, you get hit with a premium charge. That's another story.
So you pay 40% on all your winnings now.
I pay a premium charge on Betfair, which is a disgrace. But, you know, I'd be lost without it. So I have to have it. I mean, I know I'm getting massively over the odds on there. But still, at the end of the day, I'm really taking the right price, because once they take that 40% out, you know, the 10-1 shot I'm betting on Betfair effectively is I'm betting a, you know, 4-1 winner, aren't I? 6-1 winner, whatever it is.
So Betfair's your everyday?
Yeah, I always turn over money on Betfair because I know I'm going to win on there. So it doesn't matter if I have losing runs. I know at those prices, just keep having those bets and eventually the money will go up. In terms of getting single bets on and getting over the odds, with shops and online accounts, that's a different aspect of the game. I used to have, you know, 4, 5, 6 people in shops when I was really enthusiastic about the game and, you know, lived and breathed it a bit more. I'd have 4 or 5 people in shops getting me bets on. But then that becomes stressful when they don't take bets anymore. You know, even when you're losing, I've had bets in shops, taken prices, bet 4 losers. Took 4, 5, 6-1, they go off half that price. My guys go back the next day, no more bets. Done your money. Not a lot of fun in that.
So how do you get these multiple bets on, the serious bets? How do you get them on?
Well, the online accounts are pretty crucial, but you just have to keep getting them. But with the online accounts, if you can take your prices and get your multiples, they're worth their weight in gold. You know, so...
But it's getting the accounts. So you mentioned that you go nightclubbing a lot. And part of the reason you do that is to meet people, to befriend people, to open accounts for you.
Yeah, I have to meet new people.
To be able to get bets on.
Because I've exhausted, you know, so many avenues. You have to keep meeting new people and getting new accounts. Because the accounts don't last 5 minutes. Which I don't mind, as long as I can get new ones and, you know, can keep getting the bets on. You don't mind. But then, you know, you're in choppy waters, because then you're meeting strangers to an extent. And you have to trust them to pay you with a lot of money. So that's where the gambling's coming in, because you're actually gambling that you're going to get paid. You've got to have the bets, hope they win, and then hope that the person pays you as well.
It's actually a really big part of your job, networking, to try and get accounts.
It's become that way, yeah, because it's not as straightforward as going to a track now, you know, and having £1,000 win on a dog, getting your wages, going home, you know, and then coming back the next day and operating again. It's completely different to that now. It's all about turning over money and getting new accounts, getting new people involved, and lasting. You know, you have to last. You have to stand the test of time, and you just have to keep, for want of a better word, using new people.
What sort of reaction do you get from girls you meet in nightclubs when you say, can you open me a few betting accounts?
Well, they're getting 10% for nothing. That's what I offer. So they're literally doing nothing. They're just letting me use their betting account. They're not gamblers, you know. They don't need the account. So, you know, it suits them really to get money for nothing.
And people are really across these accounts. You said that you can have certain bets, and as soon as you strike the bet, be it going to win or lose, they'll get closed down.
Yeah, there's oftentimes they would have closed an account before a dog's even run, you know. So yesterday, for instance, I placed a bet at 4 o'clock. By 4:30, I placed a bet at 4 o'clock. Dogs are running at 8, 9 o'clock at night. By 4:30, I was allowed no more bets. You know, the dogs have not even run, let alone win.
So you really have to nurse these accounts. How do you use them, and how often would you use them?
Yeah, I do nurse them. Like on Betfair, as I say, Betfair every day I'd be playing. With the accounts, I can wait. I can go a couple of days, a week. I've got accounts now that I'll leave for a month. because I know that the amount of pressure that's involved, when I have a bet, I know I've got to be right because I won't get a second or third chance. And if I do, they've either lost or I'm very lucky. But full fifth chances, they don't exist. So when I have the bet I have in the, on the online account, it's got to be right. I've got to be confident that it's the right bet. So if it loses, I can wipe my mouth and just say, you know, I had the bet, it got beat, get me a new account. You know, but I can't tick over money. I can't just have those little bets because I won't be able to win. I've got to be supremely confident in the bets I'm having.
And you work really hard to find these bets. Does it frustrate you that bookmakers won't take you on?
To an extent, they should. Of course, they've got to take bets. They, you know, they're a going concern. They've got to take bets. But, you know, I get that they don't want to take bets from shrewd minds, you know, people that specialise in something. Why would you want to take bets? Because they know in the long run they're going to come off worse.
But equally, that is their job, isn't it? To be shrewd as well.
Yeah, exactly. And they've got to get their prices like right. If their prices are right, what are they worried about? You know, the problem is when they're getting their prices wrong. That's what they don't like. Well, they should get their prices right then.
So it is frustrating for you?
Yeah, very much, yeah. But I mean, that's... It's all about getting over the odds and having an edge. You know, as I say, that, for example, the three dogs I bet last night, I was getting so much over the odds. It was a great bet, win or lose. So there's no fun in betting the right price. If you're betting the right price all the time, there's no buzz in that.
And do you have a price in mind that you want? Because you said you can look at different accounts and there can be like a smallest amount of difference. I mean, one might be 7-2 on one website and 3-1 on another website, but ultimately that's big money when if a Trixie comes in. Do you have a price in your mind that you want to take?
Yeah, that's where the instinct comes in, because and that's where like I have a knack for backing winners and knowing dogs and things like that, because you would just, I would just know, I see a dog at 6-1, I would just know that's not a 6-1 shot. That's a 3-1 shot, that's a 5-2 shot. Automatically, I've got to back that dog. Whether it wins or loses is immaterial. So that's, you know, that's the be-all and end-all of the job, really.
And you mentioned you like your multiple bets. It's not just Trixies, is it? Lucky 31s and all sorts.
Yeah, again, it depends. I can look at, you know, races one day, fancy one dog strong, and have my maximum bet on that. There could be other days I fancy 30 dogs. I lack total conviction to have maximum bets on them, but I might want to stick them in at the prices. I might want to stick them in a Super Hinds or a Lucky 31 or whatever, and I might do different variations of a bet. I might have a double, I might have a Trixie. You know, there's all different ways for me to make a crust.
Can you make as much money now as you were, say, 10 years ago?
I can. I'm still making as much, but if I was doing the same as what I was doing 10 years ago, I wouldn't be winning. So you have to evolve. You have to change your methods.
Have you changed?
Mainly just bigger prices. That's probably how I've changed. When I was betting the superstar dogs years ago, I didn't mind taking 6-4 about an even money shot that I knew was an aeroplane and was just a winning dog and it would win. Now, those kind of dogs, they don't exist, they're not about. So it's more about trying to find bigger prices. That's the beauty of Betfair, when you can bet dogs. I bet a dog at Hove a couple of days ago, 16-1 on the machine, it probably represented 4-1. It probably SP'd at 4-5-1.
Did it win?
It won, you know, 16-1. It can't be that price. So that's why you must always gamble. That's why you must always have a bet. If you're getting over the odds, you must bet.
I don't want to ask you how much money you make, but is it enough for a nice life?
Yeah, I can't complain. It's enough to get me by. I don't want for anything. If I want to go on a nice holiday or I want to buy something, you know, it's afforded me, you know, all that I've wanted.
If you had your time again, life, would you do the same?
Yeah, I wouldn't change it for the world. I mean, I think it was my destiny to be involved in greyhound racing. You know, the training aspect, the training side of it, the gambling side of it, you know. Always wanted to make money, always wanted to make a decent living and look after the people that looked after me, give a bit back and stuff like that. I wouldn't have been able to do that without greyhound racing, without betting.
And if there's people watching this who, you know, are interested in what you're saying, maybe want to become pro punters themselves, what would you advise them?
Specialise in something. Find something you love, something that you're obsessed with. All the best people in life, they're obsessed with whatever they're doing. That's why they're the best at it. So find something you're passionate about, something that you love, and then work hard. Put the work and effort in. You only get out what you put in.
Obviously, living a life as a pro punter is quite interesting, particularly the sort of life you lead. And you've got some interesting stories along the way. Tell us about the night you went out and you couldn't get home.
Yeah, a couple of years ago now, I was out on a night out, and I tried to try to get some cash out of a cash point, and it couldn't get any cash out. And I tried to get an Uber back, and that declined as well. So I smelled a little bit of a rat. I thought I'd better phone the bank up.
You're a bit worried, aren't you?
I was worried, yeah. I felt like I was a skimp member. I felt like I didn't have any money in the world. So I phoned the bank up. The bank says to me, someone's going to get in touch with you regarding your account. So I didn't really think too much of it. And I got a letter through the post about a week later. They froze my bank account. So I couldn't get any money out. Luckily, I had a little bit of cash around me to get by, to get through the week. They froze all my money in bank account and then sent me a letter saying that I was closing my bank account. Nat West, who I banked with from a student from the age of 18, I banked with him for 20 years. They closed my bank account, and it was all to do with, it must be to do with the money I'd coming in from different quarters, like putter honours, online accounts, you know, nothing illegal about it, but obviously I had money coming from different people. Mm.
And that was in relation actually as well, directly to, you know, you were trying to swerve the 40% premium that you have to pay with Betfair, and you had money coming in out there. But tell us what happened when you were trying to avoid the Betfair fees.
Yeah, I had my private banking manager wanted to see me, and he asked me questions, who are these people? People had sent me, I think someone sent me 40 grand, someone had sent me 60 grand. So he said, who's so-and-so and who's so-and-so? And I had to explain to him, well, look, this, I've got a Betfair account. I'm trying to swerve paying 40%, so I'm betting in someone else's account. That was all well and good. That was a good idea in theory, but in practice, Betfair suspended my account and the other account and done me for premium charge evasion and took the 40% out of what I'd won in the second account. So I didn't avoid it anyway. They found a way to still charge me 40%.
I mean, that's unbelievable, isn't it? That they managed to find it, related it to you, and you didn't get away with any of it.
No. I still paid the fine. I think I won about 60 grand in 3 months, but they still deducted my 40%.
How frustrating is that?
Yeah, it's frustrating. But you get used to taking blows. That's the one great thing about gambling. I think it makes you a better person. You handle adversity a lot better than you would do if you wasn't gambling successfully. You take blows. You have to take blows better.
I'm guessing with the banks, there's something there where they're concerned about, I don't know, something illegal happening or money laundering perhaps. And that does apply to other areas. So you had difficulty buying properties in your life as well. You tried to buy your first property when you were in your mid-20s. What happened?
Well, I remember going and see someone like a mortgage broker or someone and saying, like, any chance of me buying this and getting a mortgage? He said, what do you do? I said, I'm a professional gambler. He says, no chance. You know, the only chance you've got of ever having a property, but he said, we're not going to lend you money, you know, on the off chance that you might win, you might not. We don't know how good you are. We don't know what kind of money you get. So I knew from that point on that effectively I was going to have to buy property outright. Which again is a hard deal, but you know, it's life as a gambler. It's something you're going to have to learn to live with.
And you have lived with that. You mentioned in the interview earlier that you very much wanted to be able to give back to the people that have given to you in life, and gambling has allowed you to do that.
Yeah, I bought properties for my mum's sister and my nan and granddad. That was important to me. So you know, as I say, without betting on dogs, I wouldn't have been able to do that. You know, I got a degree in history and politics, but I wasn't clever enough to get a job that's going to pay, you know, well enough for me to buy properties outright and not get mortgages and stuff like that.
We should be talking about Brexit then, should we?
No.
What's your biggest win ever? Biggest
win in one day, I think I remember winning about 60 grand in a day once, which was nice. I remember I had two different accounts. I had a Bet365 account. I think I won about 34 grand in there, and I had a Paddy Power account, won 12 grand in there, and then with what I won on Betfair and in betting shops and all that. That was a good day. So that's probably my biggest win in a day.
And that was all different bets, not just different
accounts. Yeah, that was different variations of bets. So that would have been, I think that was a lucky 15. I won 12 and a half grand from a lucky 15. I think the 30 odd grand come from a lucky 63. I might have had 5 winners out of 6. I was probably unlucky not to get 60 or 70 grand out of the Bet365 bet, something like that. And then singles, I might have been having, you know, hefty single bets as well at decent prices. So it all adds up.
How many accounts do you reckon you've had over the years?
Untold, literally. I literally had untold, yeah.
Four figures?
I've had to put myself out to just get untold accounts. You can never have enough of them. No, there's never a last bet. So you're just constantly on the lookout. And because they don't last as well, unfortunately, the accounts don't last. So, you know, you just have to keep getting them, just keep moving on and getting new accounts all the time. Can never meet enough people. You just have to obviously have a bit of trust in the people that you're dealing with.
And it's not just accounts, it's shops as well. You reckon that maybe single-handedly you actually got a Betfred closed down once?
Yeah, I remember once a friend of mine, he'd never put a bet on in his life, and he asked me, he was interested in what I was doing, and I told him I bet on dogs for a living and all that, and he said, oh, I'm not doing anything today. Want me to put a bet on for you? So I gave him a bet. He put a bet on, I think he laid out £250, and the £250 bet come to 30 odd grand, I think, and they paid him out in cash.
He'd never been in a betting shop in his life.
The first bet he ever struck in his life, and a couple of weeks later that betting shop was closed down. I'm not saying I had anything to do with it, but I didn't help their profits that week, I know that much.
And you do go out a lot, and you network trying to get accounts on whatever, and you actually mix with a lot of footballers. We were talking about the difference in the way that footballers bet, and we know that there's a lot of footballers that do gamble. It's a different way of betting to you, but you know guys who are interested in it, but you see it very differently.
Yeah, I mean, most people I know, sporting people, they love gambling. You know, and if you can control it, gambling's a great thing. I mean, you don't get any much more excitement out of gambling than you do, you know, doing other things. So if you can control your gambling, and if you can win, but it's all about, that's why you're better off betting on dogs or something you specialise in, something you've got a chance at. Why would you want to go and bet in a casino or them stupid fruit machines when you've got no chance? You know, if you can study form, have an opinion on dogs, why wouldn't you want to bet on dogs? But even horses, become a judge.
Do you still get a buzz from it? A thrill of a win?
Yeah, the thrill of a win, absolutely. Because, you know, at the end of the day, I've got to win to get by. So it's everything. Winning is everything. But in terms of, you know, backing a 7 or 8 to 1 winner and being the big I am and saying, oh, I'm a great judge, that's immaterial to me. I don't really care about that. So I'm not trying to show off in front of anyone. I'm just trying to get a living. So the excitement and the buzz and being proved right, secondary. Don't really interest me. You know, when I first started going racing, being respected as a judge was of utmost importance. And then once you get past that, it's not of any importance anymore. Whether people respect your opinion or not, it doesn't matter to me.
Well, Darren, it's been a pleasure. You've got millions of stories. They've been great to hear, and I wish you every success for the future.
Thank you, Julie. Same to you.
Starsports.bet provide the complete betting experience. Find us online via our website and app, on course, and at our flagship betting shop in London's Mayfair. 18 years and older only. BeGambleAware.org.